lion heart, a lion heart, a lion heart, a lion heart. This is Those Who Wait, a The Hobbit: An Unexpected Journey fanfic, written by Sospace and read by Rena Jenkins. The story is rated PG-13, contains the pairing Feely Keely, with additional tags for incest, pining, angst, unrequited love, pre-canon, soul bonds, and dwarfish culture. Howling ghosts, they reappearing, mounts inside our skies with fear, but you're a king and I'm a lion. Feely wakes up one morning and just knows. It's not a revelation that comes in a flash of light, a bolt of lightning. He doesn't spend hours puzzling over the beating of his heart, the flutters in his stomach. He just opens his eyes to the firelight under Ered Luin, looks across to his brother asleep in the next bed. And that's it. He's lost. For a moment he lies still, watching Keely's chest rise and fall. And all he wants to do is touch him, run his fingers through his hair, curl up beside him and watch him sleep. And suddenly there's bile in his throat. Feely gets out of bed, pulls his clothes on. He's rushing, leaving his shirt half open and his hair unbraided, and all he can think is, no, please, no. Because he might be young, but he's not a fool, and he knows what this awful, beautiful feeling in his heart is. Before he really knows what's happening, he's running, barefoot and wild, and he's pushing past his mother and barreling through the chambers beneath the mountains like nothing more than an animal. When he stops, his own breathing is stale in his ears, and he clutches at his chest, fingers rending into his skin. He's outside, and it's cold. The sky is blue, but the trees are golden, and the sun jealously guards its warmth. Feely doesn't care, and he sits on the rocky hillside and watches the towns of men below, smoke churning from their rooftops to dance in the sky. He presses the heel of his hand into his forehead. It wasn't supposed to happen like this. He thinks about Keely, and his heart races faster, faster. Feely? Dee's voice is gentle, her hand on his shoulder even more so. And suddenly he feels so stupid, running away like some love-struck elf to sigh in the woods. May I sit with you? Of course, he answers automatically, and shifts to give her space beside him. She sits close and takes his hand in hers, wrapping him in warmth and affection. And it's all he can do to not run away again. His cheeks are flushed red. I'm sorry, he says. She squeezes his hands. I'm your mother, she says. You need never be sorry to me. Now tell me, what's troubling you? Feely can't meet her gaze. I'm in love. It sounds pathetic, even in his head, and so he shuffles his feet and stares at the sky, and all the while she sits, quiet and patient, and her thumb rubs soft circles on the back of his hand. He says, I woke up and, well, there was this ache in my heart. And he's rolling his eyes even as he's saying it. But Dees goes very still for a moment, her eyes bright and sad. Did I ever tell you about when I met your father? She says, and there's a smile in her voice. It was at a feast back in Erebor. I spent the evening with your uncle, eating everything in sight and playing tricks on grandfather. She pauses, and her hands warm. Then this young dwarf came stumbling up to us. He was drunk. His beard was a mess, and there was trifle of all things down his legs. And he came up to me, did the deepest bow I've ever seen, and said, "My lady, I'm going to marry you." Dis laughed softly, and despite himself, Feely is fascinated. His parents don't talk about this kind of thing, not really. And the image of his father, caked in trifle, is one he won't be forgetting any time soon. "The cheek," Dis continues. "Thorin very nearly had him carted off to the cells." But then he smiled at me, this huge, beaming smile, and... She shrugs. That was it for me. I'd found my one, and he'd found his. He can feel her looking at him, soft and loving. "That's what you're feeling, isn't it?" she asks. "You know." "Yes," he mumbles. "Yes." She's quiet for a moment, and then says, "Can you tell me?" "Keely," Feely thinks. "Keely, my brother. I'm in love with my brother, and I will never love another." He's shaking, and Dee's touch is steady and calm. "No," he says, tight and short. "No, I can't. It's too..." He breaks off, finds his fingertips are dug into his thighs. "It's not..." His breathing is loud in his ears. "Oh, Feely," Dis murmurs, and she smooths his hair back, tucks it around his ears. He feels like a child again, and there's nothing he wants more than to disappear into his mother's arms and hide from the world. But he can't, because she's always known her sons better than they've known themselves. "It's your brother." And Feely screws his eyes shut, feels his shoulders hunch tight. Dis rubs soothing circles on his back. "Oh, my sweet boy," she murmurs. "Are you going to tell him?" "No," Feely blurts out. "Never, I can't, it's not fair on him. He's too young. He shouldn't have to deal with that, with me. I'll just go." And he stops, because he's never been able to imagine life without his brother before. "You can't leave, Feely," Dis says quietly. "That's not fair on either of you." Feely stares out over the treetops. "What else can I do?" he asks, and he hates the way his voice shakes. "Endure," Dis says, and takes his hand. "Love him and endure." And Feely knows that there's no other option. They sit in silence for a long while, out on the hillside, and the birds squawk overhead. The day is cool, the breezes tug at Feely's loose shirt, but he hardly notices, hardly cares. In the end, Dis takes his hand, pulls him to his feet, leads him back into the mountain. And the moment they return home, Keely is everywhere, wide-eyed and worried, and he grabs Feely's shirt, says, "I woke up and you weren't there, brother. Where did you go?" Feely feels Dis squeeze his hand tight, then let go, but it's like he's dreaming it. Keely radiates heat. His hair is mussed and in his eyes, and his concern makes Feely's heart thud louder, louder. "On the mountainside," he finally manages. "I needed some air. Didn't mean to worry you." Keely thumps his chest. "Sighing like a love-struck elf?" he asks, and the smile on his lips is so unaware of the truth in his words. Feely forces a smile. "Something like that," he says, and shoves past his brother to their bedroom. Unhelpfully, Keely follows him. As Feely dresses properly, Keely says, Uncle says they've uncovered a new vein in the mines. Gold, he thinks, or maybe even mithril. He says we should go down and see. I waited for you. Feely's fingers falter on the fastenings of his trousers. And for a moment, he thinks about saying, No, never. Go without me and never speak to me again. But Keely's eyes are wide and excited, and he's practically bouncing at the end of Feely's bed. It makes his heart hurt. But it's a good hurt, satisfying and rich, like pressing a thumb deep into a fresh bruise. Feely says, Sounds good. Let me get my boots on. They spend the day deep in the bowels of the mountain, helping to pull shards of gold from the rock, older dwarves chuckling into their beards at Keely's boundless enthusiasm. Feely is quieter, following in his brother's footsteps and stopping him from tripping into as-yet uncharted chasms. But when they take to wandering the miners' tunnels side by side, never speaking but never needing to, Keely stops, turns to him, and says, You're not happy. It's such a simple statement, and it ignores so many of the thoughts that are racing through Feely's head, but at its heart, it's completely, painfully true. Feely closes his eyes, just briefly, and says, I suppose not. Sorry. Keely's eyes are bright. No problem, he says. You're always boring anyway. Want to talk about it? There's nothing Feely's ever wanted to do less. But he thinks about Keely with fresh-hewn gold in his hands, and Keely laughing as he careens towards a one-way journey downwards, and something snaps in his heart. He says, I think I found my one. Isn't that a good thing? Feely almost laughs. No, he says. Not really. Keely looks confused, but he doesn't press the point. They're still in the dimness, torches flickering at evenly spaced intervals along the corridor, but Feely stares at his brother, memorizing every angle of those two fine features, every curl of that downy dwarfling beard, and, oh, there's a part of him that's crying out to kiss him, to touch him, to declare his heart in every flowery way dwarves never do. But he doesn't, because he can't. It's not Keely's burden to bear. We should keep going, Feely says, and forces himself to keep his voice steady. Mother'll be waiting for us. He starts walking, doesn't wait for Keely to follow. But he does, of course, and before long they're winding through the mountain, close enough for Feely to just reach out and take his brother's hand. You know, Keely says after a while, if you want me to, I can go beat them up. Feely's thrown. What? He asks. Whoever it is. Keely clarifies. You're one. If you're not happy, then they must be upsetting you. I'll beat them up. Just give me a name. He pauses for a second. Feely can almost hear the cogs whirring in his brain. And then continues. Is it that girl in the kitchens? She always gives you double portions. I'll get her. Feely laughs, for the first time since he woke up that morning. No, it's not her. He says, and slings his arm around Keely's shoulders. The closeness is intoxicating, but he takes a breath, wraps his heart up, and tucks it down deep. Don't worry about it. I'll be fine. And Keely's smile is worth the hurt. The years pass. The first few months are hell. Feely hurts every waking moment, heart pounding against his ribs every time his brother smiles. And when Keely decides he wants to take up archery and nearly gets shot on the range, well, Feely thinks he might lose his mind. The fear, the worry, the love, it's all too much. And he watches as the dwarves he grew up with find each other and fall into the rest of their lives together. And it's like dying. Keely comes home one day with a split lip and a black eye, fear in his eyes and breath hiccuping in his throat. Their parents are furious. Their uncle is outraged. But all Feely does is slip out quietly that night, find the older dwarf who hurt his brother, and smash him into the ground. Dees finds him cleaning blood off his knuckles, still shaking from adrenaline and rage, and doesn't say a word. She dries his hands and says, "Someone I knew once mocked your father to my face. I broke his arm." It doesn't necessarily make Feely feel better. He has nightmares about blood and screams and his brother's terror for weeks after. But he understands, perhaps. As dwarves, this is what they are. All rage and hate and love. And it's what they have to live with. Keely doesn't grow up for a long time. He's the baby of the family, always has been, and it's a position he's quite happy with. No responsibilities, no duties, nothing to do save snipe at rabbits with his bow, an out-of-the-blue gift from their uncle, and dog his brother's heels all day. Not that Feely does much to dissuade him. Every moment they spend together is like a dagger in his heart, but every moment they are apart is so much worse. He takes what he can get. Brotherly wrestling, friendly punching. And one day, 5 years after the moment Feely lost his heart, Keely asks him to teach him to braid his hair. They spend hours sitting together, hands woven through each other's hair, and Feely finds himself looking for fault in his brother's work just to prolong the moment. Keely's fingers unweave the braids in his mustache, then bees them back together even better, and his eyes are full of laughter. That night, Feely can't sleep. He watches Keely's chest rise and fall, rise and fall. And he eventually gets up in the middle of the night, leaves. He spends hours padding the halls of the Red Luin, stone cool beneath his bare feet, and he finds himself on the mountainside with the sun rising. It's winter. Snow lies thick on the ground, and everything is bathed in the golden light of morning. Feely thinks about Keely's hands and his hair, and he can hardly breathe. He's back in bed by the time his brother wakes, and he pretends to be asleep when Keely whispers, "Hey, Feely, you awake?" Keely waits a moment for a response, but when he gets none, he gets up, whistles to himself as he dresses. Feely closes his eyes to stop the tears. This is not who he is. He won't be this weak. He spends the day getting drunk in a tavern, and when Keely finds him and drags him home, muttering something about brothers being idiots and their mother worrying herself sick, it's all Feely can do to not just bury his face in his brother's chest and never let him go. He's drunk, he could explain it away, but he doesn't, because even through a haze of ale and spirits, he knows that it would hurt too much in the morning. Keely strips him, puts him to bed, runs a gentle hand through his hair. "Go to sleep, you idiot," he says affectionately. "I love you." Feely's drunk. He punches his brother in the face. Their relationship is a little strained after that. Keely gets this wary look in his eyes every time Feely enters a room, and Feely can hardly look at him. It makes him sick to think that he hurt his brother, but yet he is in so much pain every moment of every day. He hates his brother, hates him for being too young and too naive, but at the same time, he loves him more than all the gold under the ground. Theus takes him aside one day, says, "Your uncle has taken a job as a smith in one of the towns of men. He needs an extra set of hands, someone he can trust. He's going to ask you to go with him." Feely feels cold. "I can't leave things like this," he says, his voice choked. "I can't leave..." "You need some time away," Dees interrupts. "It's not forever, but you need to do this." Her eyes are gentle, her touch firm. Feely thinks of his brother's laugh, of his smile and his joy, but then the hurt and confusion, the blood dripping from his nose, and slowly he nods, says, "Yes." And something lightens in his chest, a weight he's been carrying for far too long. He leaves with Thorin 3 days later, his world carried on his back. He doesn't see his brother for 4 years. They live practically on top of each other, their garret barely big enough for 2 narrow beds, their forge tiny, and when they get there, in a serious state of disrepair. They spend the first few weeks fixing the place up, but when Feely has spent 5 days solid scrubbing dirt off the walls, and Thorin has found a cut-price anvil that only just fits the room, they open up shop. The name Erebor might not mean much to these men, but they still know the skill of dwarves, and trade is brisk. They shoe horses and forge swords, fix cooking pots and hammer helmets back into shape. They spend their nights in quiet companionship, their days in backbreaking work. Sometimes Feely can go days without thinking of his brother, and when he can't, well, they make enough to afford the cleanest whores in the brothel. They're hard at work in the muggy heat of the forge one day, when Thorin says, "When we left Ered Luin, your mother told me why you were leaving." Feely blinks sweat out of his eyes, doesn't look at his uncle. His heart is racing.
"She did?"
Thorin brings the hammer down on glowing steel, readjusts his grip.
"Yes," he answers. "And I received a letter from her yesterday."
He pauses, strikes the steel again. The world buzzes loud in Feely's ears.
"Keely wants to come and join us, with my permission."
"There's not enough room," Feely says, automatically, pleadingly. Thorin looks at him finally, and his eyes are dark.
"We've made enough that I can find a room elsewhere," he answers. "Leave you two to the heat and the smell."
Feely looks up, says, "Please, uncle, I can't." Thorin's gaze is steady.
"I've already said yes," he answers.
That night, Feely gets raging drunk and loses himself between the thighs of the cheapest whore on offer. She whines far too loudly and pulls at his braids annoyingly hard, and he closes his eyes and doesn't think of Keely. When he comes back to their room, a drunken mess and reeking of sex, Thorin just looks at him with those dark, disapproving eyes, rolls over, and goes back to sleep. Keely arrives a week later, just as the sun is setting. His boots are stained, his hair tangled by the wind. And Feely remembers all the hurt, all the pain, all the grief. But then he sees his brother's face for the first time in 4 years, and all he feels is joy.
I've missed you, Feely blurts out, before his head can tell him not to. And the smile that spreads across Keely's lips in response sets his heart on fire. The three of them eat together, bread and fresh roasted meat dripping its juices over their fingers. And then Thorin makes his excuses, leaves him alone. He's found a room above the baker's shop across the road, and it might be cramped by the townsfolk's standards, but compared to where they've been living these past few years, it's palatial. And for the first time in a very long while, Feely is alone with his brother. They talk for a while, sat at opposite ends of the tiny table, and it's as if nothing has changed, as if they never spent any time apart. They laugh and joke. Keely spins tales of the mountain. Feely elaborates on Thorin's foibles. The stars come out. The sky blazes with pinpricks of light. Keely tugs his shoes off, sits on the end of the bed that was once Thorin's. "Your hair is longer," he says. Feely raises an eyebrow, shrugs off his jerkin. "Your voice is deeper," he quips back. And it's only when he says it that he realizes it's true. Keely is taller, broader, and his hair might still be wild and unbraided, but the downy fuzz that used to colonize his chin is now a smattering of stubble, rough and messy. Feely wants to rub his hand across his brother's chin, feel the scrape against his palm. He stays where he is. "True," Keely admits, and unlaces just the top of his shirt. "It's been 4 years, brother. I've done a lot of growing up." And there's something in his eyes, something dark and needy. But no, because it's been so long and Feely isn't going to mess this up. Not now. Keely is his brother. That comes before everything. He pauses, jokily says, "I'm sorry I hit you." Keely doesn't smile. "I'm sorry I told you I loved you." And the bottom drops out of Feely's stomach. Because Keely knows, he must do, knows why Feely left, knows why he ran. Humiliation floods through him, because he tried so hard to not let his brother know, to keep his secret. This isn't something Keely should have to deal with. Not now, not ever. Mother, why? Feely finds himself thinking, full of bitterness, and he's moving before he can help himself, running again, and he won't stop until he's so far away. Keely's hand is on his arm, heavy and warm. "Stop," he says. And for some reason, his voice is shaking. "Brother, look at me." Feely can do nothing but obey. And Keely's face is so open. Loss and regret and something Feely refuses to name scrawled across his features, like mithril veined through black rock. "When you left," Keely says, and his voice is so tight and so terrified, "I was so lost. I didn't understand what I'd done wrong. Mother kept telling me it wasn't my fault, not really, that you'd explain in time." He's shuddering, shaking. "I spent years waiting for you to come home, and you never did. For a long time, I thought I hated you." Guilt floods Feely's heart. Sends him reeling. He wants to be sick. "And then," Keely continues, his fingers flexing tighter around Feely's arm, eyes pleading, "I woke up 15 days ago this morning, looked over at the bed you used to sleep in, and I just knew. I knew why you did everything you did, because—" Keely breaks off. And Feely sees the same fear in his brother's eyes that's been controlling his life for the past 10 years. "I think," Keely starts, haltingly, brokenly, You're my one. And Feely feels like he's been born anew. He closes the space between them in half a step, and before his head has a chance to tell him to run, to leave, that he's got everything wrong, he takes Keely's face between his hands and kisses him, slow and tentative at first. But when Keely's lips part with what might be a groan, slow and tentative becomes desperate and needy. Suddenly, Keely's hands are in his hair, pulling him closer, closer. And Feely's arms are around his brother, and he doesn't care that he's probably crushing him, because he has waited so long. I'm sorry, Feely breathes between his brother's lips, kisses him again. I'm sorry I ran away. Sorry I left you. I love you. And it tumbles from his heart like he's just learning to talk. Keely's fingers are calloused from his bow as they stroke across Feely's cheeks. And I'm sorry I took so long to grow up, he whispers. And then Feely's on his back on his bed with Keely astride his waist, and his brother is fumbling with the ties of his shirt, ripping them apart in haste, and Feely finds that his hands fit Keely's waist like they were made for each other. He catches Keely's hands, presses slow, gentle kisses to his palms. He looks up at his brother and says, I was lost without you. He's never felt so open, so exposed, so honest. And Keely's lips are split in that beautiful beaming smile. And then he's leaning down and kissing him. And it's, I'm sorry, and you're my everything, without a single word being said. They fall asleep together on that hard, narrow bed, still mostly clothed and with nothing but kisses passed between them. Feely dreams of cold blue skies and autumn trees on the mountaintop, and of his mother saying, Endure, my sweet boy, with a smile in her eyes. And in the dream he takes her hand and says, I have, dear mother, and I always will. When he wakes in the morning, Keely is a hot weight twined around him, and their uncle is looking down at them with an uncharacteristically soft look in his eyes. When he sees Feely's awake, Thorin says with raised eyebrow, There's still work to be done, you know. And Feely smiles a broad, happy smile that he's not smiled in years, and says, There always is. The end. Reader's Notes. This story was written for a prompt at the Hobbit Kink Meme, which reads, Dwarves only fall in love once, so dwarves tend to be more open to unconventional couples, since you can't control who you fall for, and it's not like you can just get over it. Feely hits puberty and realizes that the one true love of his life is his little brother Keely. Two brothers falling in love with each other can be difficult, but if it's unrequited, it's absolute agony, and takes awkward to whole new heights. Feely is determined not to make things uncomfortable for his still underage brother, and would rather die than pressure Keely. He can't distance himself from Keely without explaining why, and he can't bring himself to explain. It takes Keely almost 10 years to hit puberty himself. He's a late bloomer, and realize that Feely is all that he wants. Basically, I want the long, drawn-out agony of self-sacrificing good big brother Feely, and still somewhat naive, but getting there, Keely. And, yeah, this story is basically the story of my heart. Thanks for listening. Have a nice day.